WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. High-stakes Senate race to replace Dick Durbin is right around the corner. So we're doing something a little different today on this episode. We're bringing you the U.S. Senate Democratic primary debate hosted by WBEZ, the Chicago Sun-Times, the University of Chicago's Institute of Politics, and International House. Early and mail-in voting for the Illinois primary starts on February 5th in some suburbs and February 12th here in Chicago. This is a pivotal moment. Dick Durbin has represented Illinois and Washington since 1983, first as a congressman and for going on 3 decades as a U.S. senator. But there's a crowded field of candidates who want to replace him. In a few minutes, you'll hear from the 3 Democratic candidates who are leading in polling: Congresswoman Robin Kelly, representing Illinois' 2nd District, Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, who represents Illinois' 8th District, and Illinois Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton. In addition to those 3 candidates, there are 7 others currently running in the Democratic primary: Kevin Ryan, Stephen Botsford Jr., Brian Maxwell, Jonathan Dean, Sean Brown, Awisi Bustos, and Christopher Swan. There are also 6 candidates running in the Republican primary for this U.S. Senate seat: R. Carrie Caparelli, Casey Schlebeck, Jeannie Evans, Pamela Denise Long, Jimmy Lee Tillman II, and Don Tracy. The moderators were Tina Svondelis, Chicago Sun-Times national political reporter, and Jennifer Steinhauer, senior director at the University of Chicago Institute of Politics. I was the host for the evening. Now, we began with opening statements. The first candidate you'll hear from is Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy.
Thank you so much. The reason why I'm running for the U.S. Senate is my backstory. As some of you know, I was born in India. I came to this country when I was 3 months old, to Buffalo, New York. Things were going good, and then suddenly they turned bad in the recession of the 1970s. But thanks to the generosity of the American people, when my father lost his income, we were allowed to move into public housing and food stamps. And I spent a good portion of my early childhood in those 2 life-sustaining programs. Then my father got on his feet and got a great job in, of all places, Peoria, Illinois. And so they loaded up the U-Haul, they drove to Peoria, and they made it into the middle class. And pretty much every night at the dinner table, my father would say, "Think of the greatness of this country. Think of the greatness of this country, and whatever the two of you do, my brother and me, make sure it's there for the next families who need it." And so that became the North Star of my personal compass. So fast forward through college and law school, came back to Illinois, practiced in the private sector, then entered government, and then ran a small business for 7 years, and then got elected to my current position as a U.S. congressman. 10 years later, 5 terms later, I'm still pursuing that mission statement given to me by my parents: make sure this country is there for the next families who need it. Unfortunately, that American dream that we were privileged to lead has slipped from the grasp of millions of people, especially now during the chaos of Donald Trump. You can just look at my personal story to understand why. That legal immigration system that enabled us to come to this country is being torn down every day. The food stamps and public housing that enabled us to survive is on the chopping block now. And those public schools in Peoria are under assault as Donald Trump seeks to close the Department of Education. So the question before us is, what kind of a government do we want? Do we want one that's there fighting for those who are trying to make it, or one that's trying to cater to those who haven't made? I think we need to nurture the American dream for everyone.
Thank you, Congressman. Lieutenant Governor Stratton.
Thank you and good evening. First of all, let me thank our hosts, University of Chicago Institute of Politics, WBEZ, and Chicago Sun-Times. I also want to thank our moderators, Tina and Jennifer, and thank you, Sasha, for facilitating tonight's conversation. I am Juliana Stratton. I've been so proud to serve as your lieutenant governor, representing the entire state of Illinois for the past 7 years. And this journey for me really started 10 years ago, when I was caring for my mother, Velma, who had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. I was a mom, I was working full-time, and caring for my mother in the final years of her life. I always say it was the hardest thing that I have ever done, but also the greatest honor of my life to care for my mother in her final years. Some of you know what I'm talking about when you think about having to juggle all of those things at one time. Well, at that time, I was watching the news, and I saw that my state representative was working to strip away health care from seniors like my mother. And I got angry and yelled at the television, somebody should run against him. And I didn't know it was me, but it turned out it was me. And I stepped up to run because I don't shy away from a fight, and I ran against a 13-year incumbent, and I won. But look where we are, 10 years later, and healthcare is still on the line. But it's not just healthcare. Donald Trump and his allies are attacking our rights and our democracy. They are attacking the Constitution. They are attacking our economy. And they are attacking our neighbors. This is a time when I travel around the state of Illinois when people say they're looking for a fighter who will go to the mat fighting for them. And I came here tonight to tell you I am that fighter, and I will take your voices with me to Washington. I look forward to taking your questions.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Congresswoman Kelly.
Thank you. Thank you to the host, thank you to our moderators, and thank you to all of you for being here. I am Robin Kelly. I'm the daughter of a postal worker and a grocer. I'm a mom, and I'm a dedicated public servant. And I'm running for U.S. Senate to make your life better and make your life more affordable. I've worked on every level of government, and I've been in Congress for almost 13 years. And I've passed meaningful legislation under Barack Obama, under Donald Trump, and under Joe Biden. I have the biggest Democratic district in Illinois. I am truly urban, suburban, and rural. I have a microcosm of Illinois in my district. So I know the struggles that people have. And even though people try to separate us, and we live in different areas, but we know that people have the same fears, they have the same struggles, they have the same wants and needs. And that's why I'm running on a platform of people over profits, so we can finally have millionaires, billionaires, and corporations pay their fair share, so we can invest in healthcare for everyone, so we can see our Social Security become solvent, so we can build housing and affordable housing, so we can raise wages, so we can cap childcare costs so people aren't paying more for childcare than they are for rent, so that we can invest in economic development so we have economic opportunity. I've never been afraid to show up, stand up, or speak up. I have challenged the NRA, I have challenged health insurance, and I've challenged the political machine, and I've won. Right now, I'm challenging the political machine. I have filed letters of impeachment against Kristi Noem, and I'm leading that fight. And I'm proud to say tonight I have 146 co-sponsors on that bill. So stay tuned, folks, more are coming. We need a fighter in the Senate, but we need a fighter, but we need a winner. It's not just about fighting. You have to have a record of accomplishments and show that you can get things done. And I am that winner, and I would love to take my proven track record to the Senate
Thank you,
and fight and win for you. Thank you.
Now we'll turn it over to the moderators. Let's begin.
The entire nation has been consumed by the escalation of ICE enforcement and the shooting deaths of Renee Good and Alex Preddy in Minnesota. If you were in the Senate, what specific reforms would you seek legislatively from the Department of Homeland Security, and how would you propose getting them done with Republicans in charge?
Lieutenant Governor?
Well, first, let's talk about what's happening in our communities right now. We saw it with Operation Midway Blitz right here in Chicago. And we stood strong as the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois to say that Donald Trump is not welcome here in this city. We have seen so much terror inflicted upon our communities. He said he would go after the worst of the worst, and he ended up sending his agents, his rogue agents, to snatch people off the streets, stuff them into unmarked vehicles, with no due process, no warrants, nothing, stomping on our Constitution. It is not only wrong, but it is dangerous. And here we are, and I'm standing on the stage with my opponent, Congressman Krishnamoorthy, who, as they started to attack the city of Chicago last summer, he went onto the House floor in Washington, D.C., and voted to thank ICE. He's accepted funding from ICE contractors. That is not the example of somebody who's going to stand up to Donald Trump and fight for all of our communities. I want to abolish ICE. Because this agency cannot be reformed. We are looking at what's happening, and it doesn't matter whose ICE it is. ICE needs to be abolished, and we need to move this country forward and make sure our communities are safe.
Thank you. Congressman, you're next.
Well, thank you for the question. First of all, you know, Trump did say when he got elected that he would go after the worst of the worst, and said he went after families. He separated families. He terrorized neighborhoods. And then he basically disrupted our economy at the same time. Students didn't go to school. Workers didn't go to work. People didn't go out to shop. This happened in my congressional district as well. The haunting video stays with me of ICE actually going after an 18-year-old U.S. citizen, stopping her, tackling her, an ICE agent kneeling on her neck as she's screaming, "I'm a U.S. citizen, I'm a U.S. citizen." They then snatch her away, put her in a vehicle, take her for hours without their parents knowing where they are until they had to produce papers later on at night when she was freed. That's completely unacceptable. Look, Lieutenant Governor, I'm an immigrant. I'm the only immigrant on this stage. And unlike many of you, I've actually done the hard work of trying to hold ICE accountable. I'm the only candidate on this stage that's been evicted by the CPD when we performed inspections of ICE facilities. I'm the only candidate on this stage that actually inspected an ICE facility itself. And what I learned there was shocking, that they not only target people with convictions, they go after people who are merely charged and who are collaterally present. That means innocent civilians. Look, I believe we have to abolish Trump's ICE. In light of what happened with Alex Preti and with Renee Good, what we're seeing now cannot continue. So these are the legislative reforms that have to happen. One, not a single dollar more for ICE or DHS. That's the way I voted last week, and that's the way the Senate should vote. Secondly, impeach Noem, and I join Robin Kelly in that motion. Third, we have to make sure they unmask ICE, wear identification, and finally have an inspector general within ICE to make sure they abide by the rules and regulations of the land.
Thank you.
May I respond, as he did mention my name?
You may have 30 seconds.
Thank you so much.
Sir, and before you respond, Lieutenant Governor, I just want to remind the audience, no applause tonight. Thank you. Go ahead.
Congressman, no matter what you say now, you already demonstrated that you're not going to show up when it matters. To take money from one of the ICE contractors, the chief technology officer of Palantir, and that funds your campaign, that demonstrates that that's not what is your priority. I'm not taking any corporate PAC money in this race, because I'm going to stand up for the people, and this is an example of why people are fed up with Washington insiders.
May I respond?
No, we have to keep moving.
Can I get a chance?
Okay. Congresswoman Kelly, your turn.
Thank you so much. We need to dismantle ICE. We need to impeach Kristi Noem, and we need to build an agency that people can trust. The Department of Homeland Security is too big, too unwieldy, and not accountable. And we need to do all this in the guise of immigration reform. It can't be one thing or another. We have to look at border patrol. We have to look at USCIS that oversees asylums. We have to land the plane on the Dreamers and make them American citizens. We have to find a pathway for the over 11 million undocumented that are contributing to this city of Chicago, this state of Illinois, and to the United States. That's all a part of dismantling, building back, impeaching Kristi Noem, which we're on our way to doing, and making an agency that everyone can trust again. We have to build back trust in government. My district, that's where the helicopter landed, and they pulled out undocumented and Americans, Black Americans, out of the building. They kicked in doors. There were kids' clothes strewn all over the place and brought out people tied up. These are Americans, and these are undocumented. They're not going after the murderers and the rapists that they said that they were. It's a total embarrassment, and we do have to stop Kristi Noem's reign of terror through all of our cities, California, Chicago, New Orleans, Durham, Charlotte, Minneapolis, and in Maine. We cannot tolerate this. They have got to go. Again, we have to dismantle ICE, and we have to rebuild our system, but all the way around, not just ICE. We have to rebuild the whole immigration system.
Thank you. Next question.
Let's turn to taxes. Senators Elizabeth Warren and Ron Wyden in your party have proposed a wealth tax. Do you agree with that idea? And how is your tax plan different and better than the other two on stage?
Congresswoman Kelly.
As part of my People Over Profits plan, we do need to tax millionaires, billionaires, and corporations at their fair share. I'm not saying more, not saying less. We haven't done that. We have to close the loopholes that they have to get around, because I've actually spoken to some of the corporations, and what they tell me is we're following the law, and that's the law. So we have to change some of those laws so those loopholes will go away. And as I said, I feel that if we do these things and we can do more for the American people, we can invest more in Illinois. And usually I agree with Elizabeth Warren. She has a great background in this, and I like what she's trying to do.
Thank you. Lieutenant Governor.
Well, my platform is all about giving the people what they want, and that includes making life more affordable. And one of the ways that we do that is by giving a tax break to middle-class families and paying for it with a tax increase on those making $1 million or more and our corporations. The reason why I mentioned that I am the only candidate on this stage that has made the commitment to not accept one single dime of corporate PAC money in this campaign is because it's hard to push forward policy that will really benefit the people and not corporations when you've accepted millions of dollars from corporations. I'm going to give the people what they want because I'm always going to center the voices of the American people, the voices of Illinoisans. I'm going to center your voices and take your voices with me to Washington.
Thank you. 30-second rebuttal, Congresswoman Kelly.
You've heard that I take corporate PAC money. I take corporate PAC money, but check the record. Check how I vote. I vote like the people who put me in office want me to vote. And the corporate PAC money I take, you see who I take corporate PAC money from. Unlike the commercial that the lieutenant governor has, that is paid for by dark money, and we don't know who's behind those commercials. You know who I get corporate PAC money from. Check the record. I vote like my constituents want me to vote.
Thank you. Congressman.
That's right. I think that Juliana Stratton's hypocrisy has been exposed by Tinus Vandellis in the Sun-Times. She not only accepted corporate money, not just PAC money, but corporate money directly into her lieutenant governor campaign and then smuggled it into the Senate campaign. She also took corporate PAC money into her super PAC. And that's what Congresswoman Kelly is referring to. It's a dark money super PAC airing ads right now. We have no idea who's fueling this. As for the donation that I received from a Palantir exec, going back to a previous question, when it came to my attention, we donated it to Illinois migrant rights groups. With regard to this supposed thanking ICE, 99% of that resolution was about condemning anti-Semitism following an attack on 14 Jews in Boulder, Colorado. I'm going to condemn anti-Semitism 8 days out of the week, and that was one that the Jewish community especially wanted me to vote for.
Congressman,
and I said
on the
yes.
Tax question, please.
Yes. With regard to taxes, I believe that with regard to what he calls the big, beautiful bill, I call the large, lousy law. That particular bill essentially ends up funding 50% of the benefits for the top 5% of income owners. That is completely wrong, and that's why I voted against it. I would consider any progressive taxation plan and hiking taxes on the wealthiest. But two things have to happen. One, we have to give property tax relief, especially to places like Illinois where we see property taxes going through the roof. And then secondly, there has to be accountability as well as transparency with regard to any monies raised and spent with that additional income.
Thank you. Next question.
Former Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel has proposed an age limit for members of Congress. For the president, federal judges, and cabinet members, do you believe there should be a limit, yes or no? And how old is too old to serve in Congress?
Congressman Krishnamoorthy, you first.
What did he propose?
He proposed an age limit of 75.
I would consider it. I think we should have term limits for Congress in general. I think each term should be longer. It's right now 2 years. So basically when you have your business card, it says, you know, member of Congress, it might as well say candidate for Congress, because unfortunately you have to be campaigning a lot. And so I believe that we should extend the number of years in a term and have term limits and maybe age constraints. But I think that right now the institution needs a lot of other reforms as well. And that's why I am proposing, and it's my main bill, to basically ban individual stock trading of securities in Congress. This is absolutely vital to bring trust back to Congress. Right now, unfortunately, a lot of people, they pull out their phone and they go on Ameritrade and they start trading based on inside information that they get, either from a briefing or from a classified hearing or from legislation that they're aware of, and that's wrong. And so a number of reforms have to happen with regard to Congress. I would consider those as well as anything that would restore more trust to the institution.
Would you commit to term limits if elected to the Senate?
Yes.
Thank you. Congresswoman Kelly.
You know, it's interesting about that when people talk about age, because we work with a lot of people. Nancy Pelosi, people love. Bernie Sanders, people love. Jim Clyburn, people love. So I would like to see people looked at on the work they do, not the age they are. Yes, there's some people that have stayed too long. I will be the first to admit that. But also there's people still churning it out at whatever, 75, 76, even 80, 88. So really, to me, it depends. It depends on the person. Now, this is going to sound a little strange, but I do think there should be term limits for the Supreme Court, because I think that'll help prevent maybe some of what happened this time where Barack Obama got cheated, where Joe Biden got cheated. So I do think that I would consider for the Supreme Court. And for the Senate, I would consider term limits depending on what they are. I mean, senators have a 6-year term. And I agree, our term is so short, you feel like you're constantly running. You get sworn in and you're running again. So I think that needs to be looked at also.
Thank you. Lieutenant Governor.
The most important thing about becoming the next United States Senator is your being able to trust that we're going to get things done. It's not about the age per se. It is about what do you do when you get there? Are you getting things done for the people that you represent? I'm proud of our record here in Illinois of what Governor Pritzker and I have been able to get done. I'm proud that we have created thousands of jobs. I'm proud that we've made Illinois an island for reproductive freedom. I'm proud we have passed an assault weapons ban and done so much more to make progress for the people of Illinois. But it's about people all across this state who are fed up with people going to Washington, getting elected, and then forgetting why they are there. Congressman Krishnamoorthy has been in Washington, D.C. for a decade.
Congresswoman, Lieutenant Governor, if you could answer the question about the age.
This is about the age, because my response is that it's about what you get done and not just how old you are. But to be in Congress for a decade and only get 4 bills passed and signed into law, whether it's by a Republican president or a Democratic president, 4 bills. And do you know what those 4 bills are? To rename post offices. That's not the kind of fight that people are looking for. So it's not about an age. It is about when you get to Washington, are you going to fight for the people? And I came here tonight to let you know that is the leader that I will be. I will never forget what's important to the people. It's why my campaign is give the people what they want. And I'm going to give the people what they want by listening and taking action, just as I have done as a state representative and the lieutenant governor for the past 7 years.
So that's a no?
That age?
Yes. Should there be age limits on members of Congress?
No, it's about whether you get things done for people, not an actual numerical, not a number.
Thank you.
Thank you. Time now for our next question.
May I get a rebuttal?
20 seconds.
30 seconds.
I think what people need is the truth, Lieutenant Governor. I didn't just pass four bills. I actually passed the law that actually modernizes our nation's skills-based education system, providing higher quality skills-based education for 11 million people annually. I passed the law that provides mental health resources to healthcare professionals for the first time. I got 76 other bills signed into law, including money back to our district, $1 million for Cook County Health to help people with
Thank
their health care
you.
Needs.
Thanks, Congressman. Next question.
Let's turn to a student question. Kevin, a second year in the college, asks, as a college student entering an AI-driven job market with rising costs, I'm concerned about long-term job security and opportunity. What specific policy would you champion to prepare students for the future of work?
Lieutenant Governor, you're first.
Well, certainly we want Illinois to be on the cutting edge of new technologies, and certainly AI and the advancements that are possible can be exciting, and we want to be a part of that. But we have to think about jobs. You know, I think about going to the grocery store, and some of you might have had this experience. I used to walk into the grocery store, and there would be 10 aisles that you could walk down, 10 lanes to check out, and there would be a human being in that lane that you could talk to and say hello, and as they were checking out your groceries. And now I go into the grocery store, and there are 8 lanes where there's no human being, and 2 where there is a person. And I always make it a point to go to one of those 2 because it's important to me. I'm always thinking, well, where did those jobs go? And how is technology replacing real people? So the way that I look at it is we need to make sure that as part of my plan to expand access to the middle class and create jobs like we have done here in Illinois, we have to make sure that as we move into these technologies and continue to see them expand, that we are thinking about how to make sure there's reskilling and upskilling, and that we are creating pathways for young people to be a part of these new technologies. I know that one of the things that I want to see happen as we think about trade and technical education, and I think there's a great opportunity for AI in that standpoint, that I certainly want to see us include Pell Grants, which cover 4-year universities, to be expanded to trade and technical education so that more young people can have access to those opportunities. But one thing that we know, that as we move this forward, we have to make sure we think about workers and not allow AI or any technology to take away the opportunities for people to get good-paying jobs.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Congresswoman?
Actually, 7 or 8 years ago, I did a year-long study on artificial intelligence with my colleague Will Hurd, Republican from Texas, and we looked at 4 things: national security. He was ex-CIA, so that was his thing. My thing was workforce development, bias, and privacy. And we actually passed a resolution in the House, but we couldn't, what's new, get it passed in the Senate. I wanted to do workforce because I wanted to make sure my constituents had the training that they needed to work in the AI industry. I always hold up the Kankakee Career Center that's in my district where kids go to high school in the day, then they go to the career center in the afternoon, and there they learned different trades. So I think we need to do more in high school to get people trained in the AI field, but also in Congress, we need to pass, which we haven't been able to do yet, even though there's a set of recommendations, we need to pass guardrails. There's good things about AI. We're using it now, as we know, but then there's shaky things. I know doctors tell me that they love using AI because it helps them maybe get through their work faster so they can be with their patients longer. So that's a good thing about AI. When you go to the airport and have clear, if you get through faster, that's a good thing about AI. But we need guardrails around it so it doesn't take over all the jobs. But we need to make sure that our young people and people that have lost their jobs are trained. So maybe they won't work in AI, but they'll work in another field. So I think training, and putting money behind it, helping our colleges train people, our junior colleges, and also our high schools to get our young people into the field faster. But again, I think there's positive things about it, and there are negative things about it that people are feeling. But also, I expect if you work in the field, those are higher paying jobs, so that's good.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Congressman Krishnamoorthy.
Well, thank you. Look, artificial intelligence is only good. AI is only good if it leads to another AI, and that is amazing, Illinois. How do we enhance the effectiveness and productivity of the people of Illinois? Because if it's not going to do that, then it's going to hurt all of us. And so I believe that AI has to be embedded. It has to be embedded within every facet of education. It has to be embedded in skills-based education and career technical education. This morning, I just came from a ribbon cutting at Schaumburg Regional Airport, where a program that I funded to the tune of $500,000 through a grant from the federal government enables people to conduct aviation maintenance. And it trains students to basically be part of a fast-growing, in-demand field. However, the tools that they are going to need to be able to conduct that aviation maintenance are generally AI-driven. And so they're going to need to be trained on these tools in order to be effective within that field. I agree that we also need to consider the guardrails on AI. So that means, for instance, making sure that people aren't somehow targeted based on who they are or how they look like. As a racial, religious, ethnic minority immigrant with 29 letters in my name, I'm especially sensitive to this particular issue. In addition, we do have to worry about labor standards. I think the reason why 14 unions have now endorsed me is because I try to make sure that they are at the table whenever we think about how do you bring new technology to bear on old processes. And that includes with regard to manufacturing and technologies of the future. Finally, we have to lead the world in AI. We have to invest in research and development at places like University of Chicago and elsewhere.
Thank you, Congressman.
Thank you.
Next question.
Democrats spend a lot of time talking about all the ways that they will fight Donald Trump, but is there a current or proposed policy of the president that you do support? Is
that for me? Congresswoman Kelly, you're first.
Figured. Oh, what do I support? Let me think about that really quick. Actually, even though he doesn't follow it himself, I do not. I sit on energy and commerce. Healthcare is my biggest portfolio. So I do not support Secretary Kennedy, but I do support their one little thing they were trying to do as far as wellness and exercise and eating properly and more preventative to keep us healthier. And I have legislation around food is medicine, so I do a lot of work, you know, around that. As I said, I have 4,500 farms in my district, so I work a lot with my farmers, and that would be working with the farmers, getting people, especially people in low-income communities that live in food deserts. They would have vouchers to get fresh vegetables and fruit and things like that. So that little thing that I can think of that they were trying to do with Americans being healthier, even though they said that, but then on the other hand, you know, they don't want you to have vaccinations and things like that. So they're talking out of two sides of their mouth, but that's something I do think that, you know, exercising, eating properly, that's a good thing.
Thank you. Congressman.
Well, he's such a stable genius, I don't know where to start. Look, this guy is absolutely taking a monkey wrench, a sledgehammer to our democracy right now. Not only that, he's doing that to the American dream. And I told you all about that previously. The one thing where I do agree with him is I think that we have to be concerned about our manufacturing workers and what's happening to them. Unfortunately, the Chinese Communist Party made it their plan to essentially make a lot more stuff than they'd ever need for their country, export the surplus to the United States and other nations at prices beneath the cost of production, dumping it on our markets, driving out their competition. Then they monopolize the market, and then they coerce us to do other things with their monopoly. They weaponize their monopoly. And so I do think that there is increased attention being paid to this particular issue. We have to stand by our workers. We have to stand by people who do everything they can every day to feed their families, to educate themselves, to go to work, play by the rules. And when other countries break trade rules and create an unlevel playing field, that's unfair. Now, where I disagree with him is everything else. So levying tariffs on everything from everywhere increases the prices on everything for everyone. And that's wrong, because that hurts businesses. It hurts Miles Craft in Rockford, which is devastated by these tariffs. It hurts the farmers at Kindred Farms in Atlanta, Illinois, which I visited, because they're in the crosshairs of this trade war with China. Not to mention hurting working families who can't afford the increased prices.
Thank you, Congressman. Lieutenant Governor.
Donald Trump is not a normal president. In fact, he's not a normal person. And when I look at this president and his authoritarian agenda, I always say that we're not just looking at the rise of fascism. We are staring it right in its face. He's terrorizing our communities. He's stomping on the Constitution. He's stomping on the rule of law. Look at the incompetence in his cabinet. And that's not even a strong enough word. We are seeing a president who is making us a laughing stock on the global stage. He lies. He told us on day one he was going to lower cost, lower inflation, and he has only made things worse. So no, there's nothing that I'm going to say today that I can think of that I agree with Donald Trump on. And what I will tell you is I'm not going to the United States Senate to find something to agree with Donald Trump on. I'm going to the United States Senate to represent you and take your voices with me.
Thank you. Next question.
Do you approve of the leadership of Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson, and will you support his reelection?
Do you have another question? I'm just kidding.
Congressman Krishnan Murthy, you're first.
I'm first. Okay. Well, look, look, I think that, let's see. I want to see where Brandon Johnson's going to take us as a city. Look, we have tremendous potential as Chicago. We are an amazing city in the Chicago region and all of Illinois, for that matter. And the question is, do we bring people together and try to find our boldest common denominators, or do we go a different direction? And I'm always fearful when we might be dividing more than uniting. Because when we're attacking each other, we can't attack our common problems. And so what are some of those issues that we have to deal with? One is we have to continue to build upon the record that, for instance, Governor J.B. Pritzker has done at the state level with attracting jobs.
Congressman, the question wasn't about the governor, it's about the mayor. So without attacking, specifically, do you approve of his job performance so far? And do you imagine yourself supporting him in a reelection?
Yeah, let me get to that. So basically what I'm trying to say is this. My support for him will depend on, do we do more of building on consensus and bringing people together to tackle our common problems? Attracting more economic development, especially to the south and west sides of Chicago? Do we work together with business more in trying to find places where we can help them and we can create a win-win? Do we also continue to deal with the public safety issues in a way that recognizes the long-term concerns about criminal justice, while at the same time, people's legitimate fears about crime? I would also say this, which is we have tremendous potential. Brandon Johnson can preside over a renaissance in Chicago, but only if he takes the best parts of Chicago and amplifies them,
Thank
including
you.
The people.
Lieutenant Governor.
I'm very grateful for the ways that we have stood together here in the city of Chicago and in the state of Illinois, especially in the wake of all of these attacks by Donald Trump and his administration. And you all might have seen when he was threatening to send federalized troops to our city, we all stood together. Federal electeds, the governor and I, county, and the city of Chicago, to say that we don't welcome Donald Trump here, that we don't want his troops, and that we're going to stand up for our neighbors. So that kind of collaboration must continue. I don't know if he has announced that he's running for re-election, so I have no comment on that at this time.
Thank you. Congresswoman.
Like any elected official, people would say this about me. There's some things you agree with and some things you don't agree with. I will give him a great compliment on how he handled ICE. And actually, I will give him a great compliment when Chicago was on stage with the DNC. Chicago did a fantastic job under his leadership. And when he had to, he was summoned to D.C. on the Oversight Committee, and you would be proud of how he stood up and defended Chicago and took a lot of heated questions, but he did a really, really good job. I don't know if he's running again. He hasn't said that to me, but I think that in this next year, time will tell what happens with the budget, what happens with school, what happens with businesses coming in and out of Chicago. Can he bring the council together?
Well, Mark, you all is undecided.
Time for our next question.
This is a question from Vikram. He's a fourth year in the college, and he asks, the data center boom has already come to Illinois with over 100 data centers planned or already being built in the state. How do you plan to protect Illinois residents from rising electricity rates?
Congresswoman Kelly, start us off.
This is something that we're greatly talking about in Congress. What do we do about data centers? Again, I think that there needs to be some guidelines and parameters so that people's electricity rates do not rise, even if we have to do something where there is not a tax, but like a tax credit or something, a voucher that you get if you live in the areas of the data centers. It is a great concern, and we have talked about it a lot. I'm on Energy and Commerce, so I would want to see examples of look across the country, you know, how much it is raising folks' electricity bills. But people should not have to pay for that. And we need to come up with a program where there are either vouchers that people get back or something that we can help keep their bill at a very, very reasonable level, because electricity bills are high enough, you know, as it is. So we need to be very careful of that. Of course, data centers are hiring people, so, you know, that's a good thing. But also, I don't want people, we already have an affordability problem. So I don't want people having more of an affordability problem because of who is moving into their neighborhoods.
Thank you. Lieutenant Governor.
Well, this is something we think about all the time, because as we see expansions of data centers, we know that many Illinoisans are concerned about rising utility costs. And we have to address that. We can't see anything move forward without thinking about how does it impact everyday Illinoisans. Here in Illinois, one of the things that we did was we lifted the moratorium on nuclear energy plants. And that's an example of one of the things that we did to help make sure that we can continue on our path to a clean energy future, while also making sure that the rising energy costs could be addressed. So those are the types of solutions that I think we need to look at. But the main thing is that affordability is an issue for everyone right now. Everything is too expensive, and utility prices are one of those areas. And we need to always make sure that whatever progress we're making, that we're thinking about how does it impact the people that we represent, and how do we fight to make sure that we're standing up to make sure that those things are more affordable.
Thank you. Congressman.
Well, look, I mean, data centers are a function of the expansion of AI, as all of you know in this audience. And the more that AI pervades society, the more data centers we'll build, and we're building a lot in Illinois. My district, Elk Grove Village, is home to one of the biggest concentrations of data centers of any place in the Midwest. This is what we know about data centers. Unfortunately, they consume more electricity than they produce. So they produce a net demand on the grid. At the same time, we're doing stupid stuff at the federal level. Trump actually repealed the Inflation Reduction Act. The Inflation Reduction Act was bringing much a large amount of clean, renewable energy onto the grid, including solar, including wind, and other sources. So you see demand going up, you see supply going down. Guess what happens? Prices go through the roof, and that's what we're seeing for each of us. I just saw on my own electricity bill, it went up by $100 compared to last year, and I think other families are seeing the same and worse. This is wrong. So I believe that data centers should be allowed to be built. They provide wonderful union-paying jobs, and numerous workers are employed to construct them, but they should produce more energy than they consume. And so they should be part of building electricity generation, including in addition to just the data center. I'm the bipartisan founder and co-chair of the Solar Caucus in Congress. So this is very important to me personally and professionally that we do everything we can to repeal the cuts to the IRA. This is extremely important. If we don't do this, we're going to have an increasing electricity crunch in this country, even at the same time that our competitor nations, such as China and others, are building renewables at a record pace.
Thank you, Congressman. All right, this is our final question before closing statements.
You're all leaders in the state, and you share similar policy platforms, especially with response to the Trump administration. Please tell us one policy plan that you think distinguishes you from your competitors on this stage.
Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you. Well, one key policy plan that distinguishes me, and there are several, but one is to accept no corporate PAC money and to fight for campaign finance reform and a ban on corporate PAC money. Because right now, I am hearing from people all over the state of Illinois, and they are saying that they are tired of seeing the go-along-to-get-along mentality. That people in Washington get there and they roll out the red carpet for corporate special interest and forget why they were elected to the office in the first place. I'm proud that I was endorsed by End Citizens United, and I will fight to end Citizens United when I get to the United States Senate. My opponents have taken millions of dollars in corporate PAC money. And I mentioned earlier, Congressman Krishnamoorthy has accepted money from the CTO of Palantir, but it doesn't stop there. He said, well, I gave away that money and donated it. He didn't say where he donated it to specifically, the name of the organization. But let me tell you who else he's accepted money from. From Donald Trump's MAGA advisors. From architects of Project 2025. He's accepted corporate PAC money from some of the corporations that are working to build Donald Trump's personal golden ballroom.
Lieutenant Governor, can you please answer the question?
This is answering the question. I'm sorry. I thought the question was, what is a distinction?
A policy plan.
Yes.
The policy plan,
as I started, I said, sorry if you all did not hear me, the policy plan is to end Citizens United and bring campaign finance reform, and I'm giving the example of why that's important. The reason why is because people are fed up with Washington being about corporate special interests. I'm going to fight for the people and keep the people at the center of the work that I do as your next United States Senator.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Congressman.
I should have brought some body armor here. Okay, look, I think that at this point, let me talk to you about something I'm really excited about in terms of policy. One of the biggest problems that we have right now is home affordability. People can't afford to buy a home. So just recently, I introduced legislation for a $25,000 tax credit to pay for the upfront cost of buying your first home. Why did I do this? Because I feel that young people especially are having a hard time being able to afford the 20% or more down payments necessary for buying a home. And I think buying a home is part of the American dream. That's what people think of when they think of the American dream. And so why did I do this in addition to the fact it's a good idea? Because it's worked. Barack Obama actually did this when he was president, and 2 to 3 million people bought their first residences because of this refundable tax credit, and we should do it again now. It worked then, it can work now, and the upfront tax credit can actually be used in the first year, not spread over 5 years, but in the first year for childcare providers, teachers, and first responders, because we can't have them remote work. So this is something that I care deeply about. Now, unfortunately, my opponent likes to practice politics as usual. She didn't have any policy ideas, she had a tax. And so I have to respond to them. Saying that you're for campaign finance reform doesn't distinguish you. We are all for campaign finance reform. I'm the original co-sponsor of HR 1, which would end Citizens United and reward small dollar donations. The reason why I have upwards of 90,000 individuals who've donated to me over time is because I'm an independent Democrat. I've stood up to Big Tobacco for fueling the vaping epidemic. I've gone after Kroger's and Albertsons for trying to merge hike prices and hurt workers. I killed that merger. I went after baby food manufacturers who poison our baby food with toxic heavy metals. They have a target on my back.
Thank you, Congressman. Congresswoman Kelly.
I also have to say that I will be the first one to sign any campaign finance reform legislation. It's out there. We just cannot get it passed. Believe me, I don't like dialing for dollars of anybody, whether it's corporate, a friend, or anybody like that. And you'll find most people in Congress do not like that. They rather be with their constituents. And it doesn't keep me from being a leader. I know I'm a leader in Congress. I've been a leader from day one. I've been the ranking member of the IT subcommittee, the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus Health Brain Trust, the chair of the Bipartisan Maternal Health Caucus, the chair of the Bipartisan Digital Caucus, because I know how to work across the aisle, because it's not like Illinois where everything is blue. So it's much easier when you have veto-proof House, veto-proof Senate, and everybody, you know, is a Democrat on down. We don't face that in the House of Representatives. I've been in Congress 13 years, only in the majority 4 of those years, and I've still been able to get meaningful things done. As I mentioned, my agenda is people over profits, and I have a series of things that I want to do, but one thing is raise wages for people, and I know sometimes when you raise wages that affects particularly small businesses, so I would like to see realistic wages raised, but also tax credits for small businesses that will raise those wages so that they're not losing money, and see how we could have a win-win situation.
Thank you very much. So we have time to squeeze in a quick yes or no question.
Here it is. Will you support Chuck Schumer as the leader of your party in the Senate? Yes or no?
Congressman, I'll have you go first.
Me? Okay. I'll hear his pitch. I haven't decided.
Undecided, okay.
Depends who's running against him.
Lieutenant Governor?
No, and I've already said that I will not support Chuck Schumer as leader in the Senate, and I'm the only person on this stage that has said so.
Okay. Time to move on to closing statements, and we'll start with you, Congressman Krishnamoorthy.
Thank you. Thank you for your attention. Look, I'm running to try to preserve, protect, and defend the American dream from mortal attack by Donald J. Trump. In light of the attack that he has made, and we've talked about it over the last hour, I think we only have two choices. We can either roll over or we can fight. And I say we have to fight. We have to fight in the courts. We have to fight in the press. We have to fight in the court of public opinion, in the halls of Congress, and yes, the United States Senate. But we should never, ever, ever surrender our values. And that means freedom, equality, and prosperity, the opportunity for prosperity for everyone, regardless of the color of your skin, regardless of how you pray, whom you love, or the number of letters in your name. There are 29 in mine. And so we have to do everything in our power to preserve that American dream for future generations, and that's my mission. Thank you so much.
Congresswoman Kelly.
Thank you to the host. Thank you to the moderators. Thank you to the audience. I am Robin Kelly, the daughter of a postal worker and a grocer, a mom, and a dedicated public servant. I have stood up to special interests. And also, I told you my district was the biggest Democratic district in Illinois, urban, suburban, and rural. But no matter where you live, I've seen the struggle. I feel the struggle, and I felt the struggle as a single mom putting my coins together to pay bills, and also at night sometime feeding my kids Cheerios. They thought it was fun, but I knew the real reason why I had to do that. I promise you that I will work every single day to make your life better and to make your life affordable. No one on this stage will work harder than me. No one on this stage has a proven track record like me. I've passed a number of bills, and my staff laughs at me because I have done so much I can't even remember to tell you all the things that I've done. I'm not a show horse. I am a workhorse. If you want that type of person in Congress, frankly, I don't think there's any little kids in the room that has a proven track record. And as people say about Robin Kelly, she gets done. And that's why I'm in Congress, and I've been a leader since day one in many, many ways. So I humbly ask for your support and your vote.
Thank you.
Go to Robin Kelly for
Senate. Thanks, Congresswoman. Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you for having me tonight, and thank you all for being here and engaging in this process. It's so important to hear from your candidates. And let me tell you just some in a summary form of what you heard tonight. You heard one candidate, that would be me, say that we need to abolish ICE, period. You heard one candidate, that would be me, who said we need to make sure that we don't accept any corporate PAC money in this campaign. And I challenge my opponents to take that on. You heard one candidate on this stage who said that they will not vote for Chuck Schumer as leader because right now we need fighters and not folders. By the way, that would be me. We need real fighters in Washington right now. And this race is a choice between the status quo or someone who's going to go to the mat fighting for you. I look forward to taking your voices with me to Washington. Go to julianastratton.com to learn more. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There you have it. Our thanks to Congresswoman Robin Kelly, Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, and Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton for a spirited debate this evening. Best of luck to you all in the primary. Now we will be continuing our debate. And thank you for listening. It was a great experience to be on stage at International House at the University of Chicago last night. And there are more debates on the horizon. U of C will host an array of candidates in the race for U.S. Senate on Thursday, February 12th. For event details, visit politics.uchicago.edu. Thanks to Tina Spondelis of the Sun-Times and Jennifer Steinhauer with UChicago's Institute of Politics for moderating the debate that you just heard. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you for listening. I'll talk with you in the next episode.